Today we're sharing a story nearly 200 years in the making. It's the story of the Randolph Freed People, and it begins with the death of a slave owner in 1833. John Randolph freed nearly 400 people when he died and gave them money to buy land in a free state, which turns out to be 3,200 acres here in Mercer County, Ohio. That should have been the end of this story. The people arrive, claim their land, and go on to live their lives. But that's not what happened. The white landowners in Mercer County passed a resolution declaring they would not live beside black neighbors.
Resolved that we would not live among Negroes. And as we have settled here first, and we have fully determined that we will resist the settlement of blacks and mulattoes in this county to the full extent of our means, the bayonet not accepted.
Ohio didn't intervene back then, so State Representative Dontavius Jarrells wants us to right the wrong now, return the land, or dedicate some portion of it to preserving the story of the Randolph freed people. WOSU reporter Ali Vugrinczyk traveled to Piqua to bring us this story, and she joins me now in the studio. Welcome to All Sides, Ali.
Hi, Anna. Thanks for having me.
So I outlined the basic story in the opening. John Randolph dies. He's a slave owner in Virginia. But the land that they end up getting is here in southern Ohio. So how did they get from Virginia to Ohio?
Well, physically, how they came was they traveled by wagon and mostly on foot. I've seen accounts where they had about 16 wagons, but really most people were walking. The youngest person traveling was an infant, and the oldest was a grandma over 100 years old. But the reason they came to Ohio, or the reason that Ohio was chosen, Mercer County specifically, to give them this land, was because there was already an existing black community in Mercer County of free black people living there. And I think the idea was that they could kind of just assimilate in.
Yeah, I find that so fascinating. So, right, because they're all in Virginia, and arguably, like, some of them may have wanted to stay in Virginia. That was their home, potentially, like, their generational home, depending on how long everyone had been there. But the will said you can buy land in a free state. And Virginia was not a free state. So they looked around and they were like, you know what? Mercer County, Ohio.
Yep.
But they don't leave right away, right? Because he dies in the 1830s and they don't show up here until the 1840s.
That's right. John Randolph died in 1833, and it was a 13-year legal battle between his family wanted to keep these, you know,
these people as slaves.
Yes, yeah. They wanted to keep them as slaves. Randolph didn't have any direct descendants, so far as I know. So this was his extended family that fought tooth and nail for 13 years. And Randolph had appointed a lawyer. I believe his name was Lee.
William Lee, I think.
William Lee, yes. Who had to go through this process for all of those years and eventually did secure their freedom and was able to purchase these 3,200 acres, which were a bunch of different parcels in Mercer County.
Yeah. And I think the will was pretty clear. So there's like a quote in some of the reporting I found where it says, "I give and bequeath to all my slaves their freedom, heartily regretting that I have ever been the owner of one." So I don't know how they were like, nah, he doesn't mean that.
I don't know either. And there were actually three versions of that will as well. And I think they would, in the end, they could only prove the legality of one. And it still took all that time.
So the judge finally enforces the will. And every former slave older than 40 years will get 10 acres of land here in Ohio, and they also get transportation to their new home. So these 383 souls arrive in Ohio, around Cincinnati-ish, that area, right? And then they take canal boats to Mercer County, where they're met by what some newspapers describe as a bit of a mob.
Yes. It was described to me as a mob as well. And a really cool thing that I got to do last week was go out and actually see Lock One Park in New Bremen, which is where they've preserved a part of the Miami Erie Canal. And that's roughly where these people would have come in on the boat and where they would have been met with these angry settlers. We heard a little bit of the resolution that they passed in the opening. And basically, they just had no choice but to turn around and go back the way they came, back down south.
Yeah, I heard there some were armed with like sticks and stones, potentially guns. They didn't even want to let them off to get water. They were like, no, don't even get off the boat. Just go back where you came from.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so what happens
then? Do they turn around? They obviously don't turn around and go back to Virginia.
No, they actually ended up staying in Ohio. They just headed back a little way down to Miami and Shelby counties. And one of the places that they settled was Piqua. Well, they didn't actually settle in Piqua. They weren't allowed to be in the city. They had to stay on the other side of the river. So they built this community called Rossville, which you can still see there today. And another place that I got to visit last week was African Jackson Cemetery in Rossville.
And that's where a lot of these Randolph Freed people are buried.
Yes. We're not actually sure how many are buried there because a lot of the headstones were vandalized or just kind of got sunken into the earth because there wasn't, you know, a way to care for it. Yeah. But that cemetery really struck me when I first got there. It was early in the morning and I was the first one there. And it's kind of just looks like a big field of grass because there are hardly any headstones. And it's maybe, you know, a large block is about the size of it. And you wouldn't even know it's a cemetery tucked on this back road were it not for this rusty sign that says African Jackson Cemetery and a little Ohio historical marker. I think that really illustrates how forgotten this story has been, although there are some great efforts underway now to restore that cemetery.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Pasha Thomas later in the hour about her efforts to figure out how many people are buried there and provide some new markers. But so, you know, what I keep getting tripped up about is Ohio was a free state, right, before and during the Civil War. That's why they bought property here. So how is it legal for these citizens of Mercer County to be like, no, actually, I understand that you bought the land, but you can't have it?
I don't know how legal it really was. That would be a question for a different expert. but Ohio, while it was a free state, it wasn't necessarily a friendly state.
I think that's an important distinction.
Yes. There were black codes at the time, and some of the things those did were like it restricted how you could employ a black person or a mixed person. And also these freed slaves had to be registered with the county clerk. So when they finally did settle, they had to give their freed number, which was a number assigned them when they were emancipated, and they had to register it. And we still have records of all the numbers of the Randolph freed people's freed numbers.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I was looking at, you know, I always love a story where I get to go look at like super old newspaper reports. And so I was looking at the Piqua Register from July of 1846, which is, you know, kind of a wild endeavor. But the way they describe their arrival, so that's like where they arrive in late July, they write, these unfortunate creatures, which I could never get away with writing about anybody now, but it's just like old newspapers. These unfortunate creatures have again been driven from lands selected for them. As we noted last week, an effort, which was thought to be successful, was made to settle them in Shelby County. But like the previous attempt in Mercer, it has failed. They were driven away by threats of violence. The present intention is to leave them wherever places can be obtained. And so, yeah, it wasn't just Mercer County. It was different places here in Ohio, like, just kept shutting doors and shutting doors. And eventually they have to be broken up into small clusters rather than, like, one unified people.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talked about in my reporting for this is that this wasn't something that just happened to these people, the Randolph Freed people. This happened all over Ohio and all over the nation. But one of the cool things about the Randolph Freed people is that even though they kept getting pushed away and moved around and separated, mostly they were able to actually preserve like their family groups and their story and their heritage. And that's kind of why they get this collective name and this collective history and why we still have descendants today, like Pasha Thomas, who you're going to talk to.
Yeah. And another descendant of the Randolph Freed people is the mayor of Piqua.
Yes, I got to meet him as well. He's really cool. He was telling us that he grew up in Rossville, that little community next to Piqua. And that he grew up in a house with a dirt floor in the 70s. I might be getting that wrong. He said dirt floor and he said I grew up in the 70s. don't quote me. I don't want to be wrong. But he said that at the time it was still not super friendly to go into Piqua. And there were a few black owned and run businesses in Piqua, but it was not nearly as friendly as you would expect for these communities having lived side by side for all of those years.
And what's fascinating about that is that's the place where his descendants land and finally disembark. Did he have any feelings about what it means to be mayor?
He called it ironic, and he said that his parents, who are no longer with us, would be like, you know, I forget how he phrased it, tickled, proud. He thinks it's a great story that someone who is descended from these freed slaves is now, you know, one of the most important people in the town.
Is he the first black mayor of Piqua?
I don't know the answer to that. Mm. I know that some Randolph descendants have been first black mayors. The first black mayor of Sidney, Ohio was a Randolph descendant. And I know that Chris Lee is one of the only black police officers in New Bremen up the road where they were originally chased off and turned around, which he also thinks is great because this is where his people were turned away and forced out by a mob. And now he patrols those streets as a part-time police officer.
It is crazy to think that in under 200 years, that's how different things have become. But, you know, as we've been talking about this, you know, this isn't something that we learn about here in Ohio history. You know, we learn that if we learn anything, or the takeaway that a lot of like kids from Ohio have, is that Ohio was a free state. We weren't involved in that mess. But our history is a lot more complicated.
It really is. And certainly this isn't a story that I knew before I started reporting on it. And I think that is the takeaway that we can take from this story is that there are a lot of forgotten parts of history, and maybe they're parts that we want to forget, especially when we say, you know, like, oh, we're a free state, we're awesome. But we have to acknowledge them. And I think that's what this story is about. It's about acknowledging that maybe we've forgotten some things.
Yeah, one of the people you interviewed that's in your feature story, which was excellent, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
they said it's not a happy story, but it is an important one.
I think that's exactly it.
So, you know, we're going to hear from Representative Dontavius Gerrells in just a moment, but can you tell us a little bit about his movement and the movement to maybe right this wrong? Because that's what brings us to this story today, right? There is an effort to fix what Ohio didn't fix back in the 1840s.
Absolutely. One of the things that he said over and over again while we were out there seeing these places and walking in the places where these people walked was that we have to acknowledge it. And one of the things he said is, first, we have to say we're sorry, because Ohio never said that we were sorry. And then the next thing he wants to do is find some way to bring justice to the descendants, because obviously the original folks are long gone.
They never got the land.
They never got the land. And he is looking for ways to take state-owned land, specifically in Mercer County, and give it back. I'm not quite sure what that's going to look like, and I don't know if he's quite sure. You can ask him. But some of the things that we talked about were, you know, forming a trust or making a museum or a memorial, or maybe even finding a way to give this land directly back to the descendants and finally give them the ownership that they were owed. But there are a lot of different ways to do that, and politics is complicated. Anytime you get involved with state-owned land, it's complicated. So it's unclear, to me at least right now, what exactly that'll look like.
That was WOSU reporter Ali Vugrinzik. Thank you so much for your reporting and for joining us today on All Sides.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're going to hear from Dontavius Gerrells and a descendant of the Randolph freed people about their push to make Ohio right this nearly 200-year-old wrong. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour about a story nearly 200 years in the making. It's the story of the Randolph Freed People, a group of nearly 400 former slaves who traveled to southern Ohio to claim land bought for them, only to be turned away by an angry white mob. Joining me now is the state representative calling on Ohio to right this wrong, Columbus area Representative Don Tavius Geralds. Welcome to All Sides.
Welcome. Happy Juneteenth.
Also with us at the table is Pasha Thomas, a ninth generation Randolph Freed People descendant who is working to keep her family's history alive. Welcome to All Sides, Pasha.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for having me.
Representative Geralds, you represent part of Columbus
here.
Mm-hmm. But this story takes place in the Upper Miami Valley.
Yes.
Completely outside your district.
It is, yes.
So how did you get involved?
Well, first off, I got to give honor to Pasha and her advocacy and her family's advocacy for so long. You know, as you understand, the Randolph Free People have moved all across the state, including Columbus. And so when the story was brought to me and said, you know, we don't know what to do. Could you help us? As an elected, I felt like it was just the right thing to do. And Pasha lives here in Columbus, and her family and her network is here in Columbus. And so we wanted to amplify it where the state house is. I represent the state house in House District 1. And so at the end of the day, I wanted to make sure that we uplift this story and this journey of the Black experience in Ohio to the best of my ability. And it doesn't matter if there's Black folks here in Columbus or from any part of the state, we have work to do to make sure our stories are told and are heard. And that's why I wanted to join Pasha to do this.
But this wasn't a story that you learned growing up, even though you're an Ohio native.
That is correct. As I tell people all the time, the first time I heard this story was literally 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, when Pasha and Chris went to my office and told me about, you know, her ancestors and what happened. And I was like, what? Let me go look this up. And so I just never knew. And it bothered me, to be quite frank with you, Anna, because I felt like this is a story of my history, too, in this state. And I just never knew about it. And so that even encouraged me even more to want to get involved.
Pasha, but this was a story you grew up with, right? It was a story you were always told?
It was an anecdotal story in my lineage. So nothing that I learned in school. In fact, I used to fall asleep in history classes. I never saw myself represented in classes, but my family did pass down a story that called us Randolph slaves at the time.
And so even though it's been common knowledge, perhaps even anecdotally, in families throughout the years, what I found interesting was it wasn't common knowledge even in Piqua. So where these people were finally allowed to disembark and settle. And I just, like, I can't believe that, like, the place where they got off, the place where their descendants are buried, nobody really knows that they existed.
Yeah, I think that's complicated. More than not knowing is a desire to forget or to erase. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can safely claim that people didn't know. They didn't want to know. Right. They wanted to let bygones be bygones and leave it in the past because we don't own slaves anymore. That kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. The land bought for the Randolph Freed People eventually ends up being sold. And then there's a lawsuit filed later in Mercer County to recover their property. And it's decided against them, Representative Geralds. What do you make of that legal fight? And I find it so confusing. I mean, they bought it.
Yes, it was bought, as I say, legally for these freed Africans at the time. And the narrative, at least as we look through the history books of what happened, the text, it said that basically the statute of limitation ran out for their ability to claim this land that rightfully theirs. Mm. But the truth of the matter is, you know, we lived in a time, as was mentioned, Black laws.
Yeah, this was the lead up to the Civil War.
Absolutely. And when you think about that time, can you imagine if you were basically dehumanized in every way in policy? How can you have a legal system that truly represents you fairly? And so it kind of makes sense that that would be the narrative and that would be the result of their court case, because in many respects, the legal system was not designed for us in the first place, at least at that time. I feel like we've gotten better as a country and as a society, but we still have a lot more work to do and to recognize what those people were going through, trying to fight for what's rightfully theirs. It's just astonishing to me that we did not see justice then.
Yeah, one of the facts that I found in my reporting in getting ready for this episode, Pasha, was that the white settlers who occupied the land not only refused to cohabitate and threatened their lives, but they issued decrees for the media and the politicians, which said, we will withhold voter support from anyone who upholds Randolph's will.
Yes. Yeah. So,
I mean, they made it quite clear, like, not only do we not want them living here, but if you help them, we're going to come after you too.
Yes, it was highly politicized, and it was highly militarized. Some people reduce it to knives, but these people clearly in the resolution said these
bayonet,
were bayonets.
Not excluded. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a gun with a knife on the end.
Right.
Yes, it is.
So they doubled down, if you will.
You know, we did a series earlier this year on the housing crisis in Central Ohio. Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes centered on generational wealth.
Yes.
And how that grows or doesn't grow over time. And Representative Gerald, I can't help but think of what was lost to these people and their descendants by denying them this land.
Absolutely. You know, in the press conference that we did to illuminate this to the world, I asked the question, what would their life been like had they received that land that was rightfully theirs? What type of community would have lived and grown in Mercer County, which is now, with some of that land, now all Glaze County? What would that community look like? And what type of message would we have been able to send to my, as a little boy growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, that there's a community filled with Black folk who had their land and they built community? Like, that's just something that, you know, we can't answer that question. What we can do is try to right that wrong in an intentional way through the legal system and the legislative system we have today.
So, Peja, you know, you spoke that this isn't the first time that your family has tried to intervene on this issue. So, yesterday when you spoke at the State House, you shared that your grandmother and some of the other descendants of the Randolph Free People wrote letters to former Governor George Voinovich back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. telling him this story. Can you tell us about the response?
Sure. One of the most memorable was from Neil Zimmer, who said, who made a quote something like, we're sorry to hear about this land that you claim belonged to your ancestors, which I, you know, the rest of his letter had this tone of, okay, you know, whatever you say. But by and large, the response was, we recommend that you seek legal counsel.
So it was essentially like, this is not really my problem to solve.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Gerald, you've now reached out to Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What has been his response?
Yeah, so I've talked to his team. We are currently working on getting a meeting scheduled to talk to the governor directly. There's been what I believe is, and he did, their team did respond to say they understand, they got the letter, they want to work with me to see what we can do. I've also been talking to a lot of my colleagues on both the House Democratic and Republican side to just figure out what can we do in our chamber, and then begin to have conversation in the Senate chamber as well. And so, you know, what I will tell you is I have not heard one member, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, say that this is not an issue that we should look into. So that is the promising piece. The complicated question is what do we do? And there's a lot of different pathways. One of the things I avoid, and I'm very public, is this is not about reparations. This is about justice. And it's incredibly, incredibly important that we not see this as a partisan issue, but really as a human right issue for the people that live in this state.
Let's talk about some of those options. I mean, we could start at the most basic, a House resolution acknowledging and apologizing for what happened.
100%. That's the first thing I want to do. In fact, my intent is to try and get a resolution drafted and pushed out for next week. And then when we acknowledge this wrong, then put together a task force to really begin to have conversations on what's possible, looking at our current legal system, but also some of the discretion we have in our current government powers, whether it's the governor or our legislature. So more to come, but the resolution has to be the first thing.
Peja, what do you make of that as a first step?
I appreciate the efforts. I mostly appreciate Representative Gerald's courage even to get this far where we are today. First steps are obviously great. To me, real justice would look like 3,200 acres of land, mineral, and water rights restored to the descendants of John Randolph's Freed people.
Representative Gerald, let's talk a little bit about that, because So the land that was eventually sold,
yes.
I assume like it's not all in the hands of the government.
That
so,
is
like,
correct.
So what do those properties look like now?
Well, some of it's farmland. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's, and I'm just going to talk about what's not in the, I guess, government's hands currently.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's private owned farmland.
That other people went and bought.
That other people went and bought. And because, as you mentioned earlier, no one knew this history, the truth of the matter is they don't know what they bought, right? They just bought, they thought they bought land that was legal and rightfully theirs, basically. And so that's what complicates this unfortunate journey, because we also have to educate those individuals. And that's part of what Pasha's been doing with her nonprofit. It's really been educating people to understand that this happened possibly where you are currently living and residing. And so so a lot of farmland, I think on the government side, it really depends on whether it's the Department of Natural Resources or we have the Department of Commerce, you know, different departments own different parcels. But what I'll tell you is this conversation is going to be complex, but I'm hopeful. We got far in a very short amount of time, and I'm determined to go as far as we can to right the wrong that's happened here.
So you're open to the idea of perhaps turning over some of the land, perhaps 3,200 acres in total. It sounds like it's you're at the beginning stages of these conversations.
We are at the beginning stages. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, and this is something that I talked about at the press conference, we have to educate literally the entire state on this issue. Because this story, I've talked to probably 50 to 60 people over the past couple of days about this Randolph Freed People movement. And each of them has said, I didn't even know.
Oh, I didn't know.
Right. And so we have to figure out a way beyond a marker, historical marker, what can we do to educate our communities about what happened so that when we talk about justice, when we talk about Juneteenth and freedom, right, we're talking about it not just what happened in Galveston, Texas, but right here in Mercer County, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, the state of Ohio, when it comes to the plight of freedom for Black folks here, too.
Pasha, I want to talk a little bit about the project you're doing at the cemetery, because that's part of restoring some of this history. Can you tell me a little bit about your work there?
Sure. And then I would like to, before I do that, I'd like to just go back and touch a little bit on education. I think it's really important. You talked about the wealth gap, and the racial wealth gap is contributed to by real estate and land ownership and, quite frankly, land theft. And so when we look at numbers of racial wealth today, this is four or five times more in favor of white families. So we have upwards of $188,000 per white family in the U.S. versus upwards of $24,000 for Black families and just over $35,000 for Latine families. And so that's an important thing that for us to reckon with and to know, because we have a lot of bootstraps rhetoric and a lot of nobody gave me anything. And we talked about people buying land in Mercer County, but many people inherited land from the people who took the land from the freed people. So I think that education is really important.
Absolutely.
And so to answer your question about the cemetery, we received a grant from the Miami County Commissioner's Office in their efforts toward repairing what happened. Like Ali mentioned earlier, these headstones were vandalized. That area is today unfriendly to non-white people. When we went over there last Friday, when we came back to the state car, we were met with coffee sprinkled all over the car. So,
oh my goodness, really?
Yeah. So in addition to not being kept up, it's just an unwelcoming place for descendants to even come to visit their deceased loved ones. And like Ali mentioned, these headstones were mostly kicked over. So I think to restore dignity, this project has become imperative. And so we were able to procure Design Jones. They are a Black-owned architectural firm who does restore historical places and makes monuments to historical events such as the Tamir Rice event or tragedy. And so they came over from Texas and they had a chance to walk around the cemetery and get a feel for what was there. They also took a trip out to what we call Cartagena,
yep.
And got a sense for that cemetery there. So we just finished signing the contract to start groundwork for restoring the cemetery. We hope to have that done in the next couple of years.
And that involves also using, like, looking into the ground. I can't remember what the word, like x-ray, to kind of figure out how many people are there, where they are.
Yes. So they plan to use the LIDAR technology to be able to see how many remains are there. And this could be layers of burials.
So. Yeah. Sometimes in old cemeteries, as strange as it sounds, they would stack people on top of each other, essentially.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I also heard, Pesha, that you worked on songs to tell this story.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
I was actually here at Broughton High, and one of the songs that we recorded was written about the march through Cincinnati, these some close to 400 freed African people in a group marching through Cincinnati. That song is called All My Pieces, and it just talks about this triumphant feeling, this on the way to a land that they thought they were about to inhabit. And so it's a march. It's a song of we are about to have a promise that looks nothing like where we come from, and things are going to be good. So there's that song. I've also written one called Water Wash, which is really just about trying to heal from the effects of chattel slavery.
Representative Geralds, you know, I was thinking about the song that she's describing, and it seems, I mean, it's a long journey, right, from Virginia to Cincinnati, on foot.
Yes.
And then you get all the way here, and to be told no, I can't even begin to fathom what that must have felt like.
Can I paint it a little bit clearer?
Yeah, sure. Of course you can.
Imagine being on a canal and with your family in bundles. And there are people shouting at you, calling you names, obscene language. Folks probably shooting in the air, throwing things at you, screaming and yelling. And you just came from the most horrific experience of your life, slavery. And then to be on the footsteps, almost only 8 miles away from freedom. And then to be told, we don't care where you go, but you don't belong here. We didn't have cars back then.
No.
There were no heated seats and heated environments. And it gets cold. It gets cold here. Imagine having no place to go and then to turn around and say, where do we go next? I think to illustrate it in that way captures the fear, the uncertainty, and the sensitivity of life. And so I always say that we didn't have the courage then to do right. Our government did not step in. They did not say anything. We did not do anything out of fear of the white voters at that time. But we have the courage now to do something. And I'm hopeful that illuminating this story to the world and to the state and to my colleagues, will help us get on the path of doing something.
So I guess my final question is for both of you. For people listening who want to get involved, who want to help do something, how do they do that?
I would like for people to connect with the nonprofit organization that we set up primarily for education, for academic research, and for advocacy, and for the restoration of the cemetery. The organization is called Land of the Freed. We can be found at landofthefreed.org.
And they can connect. F-R-E-E-D.
F-R-E-E-D, landofthefreed.org. And they can connect with us there. I'm at I Am Pesha on Instagram. They can follow me and see the work that we're doing. They can share the story. Like we've said all morning, education is key. So the more people that know actual and factual history, the better the outcome could be.
You know, I would just honor Pesha's work in this space. Her and her family have really been champions of really oral history that's now turned into hopefully legislative history. That is the intent here. And I think the more that people know about the Randolph Freed people movement and what's happened to those people, those 400 folk, and also get involved with kind of the journey that we are on today, right? There's going to be everything that we do is public record, as you know, Anna. And so when we put out a resolution, folks will be able to see it. Folks will be able to communicate to their legislators. They'll be able to write letters of support to show in real force that it doesn't matter if you're white or black or Latinx or someone who's never heard of the story. If you feel connected in any way, your voice matters because you are a voter. And we all, as and the State House represents you. And so getting involved, sharing your voice, sharing your words to our legislative leaders, including myself, will help us move this, not just as, a group of people committed, but really a movement of people who are trying to go in a different direction. So that's how we build an Ohio that we all deserve.
That's Democratic Representative Dontavius Gerrels. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And thanks to Pasha Thomas, a descendant of the Randolph Freed people who is working to preserve their history.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're talking about the effort to preserve photographs and artifacts from the Randolph Freed people. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. This hour, we're sharing the history of the Randolph Freed people, a group of nearly 400 former slaves who were denied the land bought for them here in Ohio just before the Civil War. Hadley Drodge is the curator of the National Afro-American Museum and Cultural Center in Wilberforce. It's a division of the Ohio History Connection, and it's a place that has preserved photographs and artifacts from the Randolph Freed people. Welcome to All Sides, Hadley.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the Randolph Freed people's story may not be well known to Ohioans, but it was never fully lost to history. Your museum has these photographs and artifacts. Can you tell us about the collection?
Absolutely. So this collection came to us in 2016. It was collected by a descendant of the Randolph Freed people named Helen Gilmore. She and her husband understood the importance of this story and the need to preserve it as an Ohioan, as an African-American, and as a descendant. And the museum that was held in York Ryle's house, who was one of the original freed people, opened in 1984. And there she held family reunions, she had exhibits open to the public, and she shared this story with anyone who was able to visit. When she passed away, she and her husband bequeathed the contents of the collection to the National Afro-American Museum, where it lives today, and where we hope to bring anyone interested in learning more to join us.
Yeah, can you tell me about some of what's in the collection? I understand you have everything from like family Bibles to blankets to lockets of hair.
Absolutely. One of my favorite items is that Bible that you mentioned. It was owned by a woman named Rosa Coles and presented to her by her mother, Caroline, who was one of the original Randolph Freed people. And when I was going through the Bible page by page just to see what handwritten notes were inside, two locks of hair fell out, which to me is so poignant because this is actually a piece of these living people. And we also have an extensive archive collection, which does include absolutely beautiful photographs of many descendants. We have plates that were owned and used by family members, just a wide variety of pieces of historical evidence to corroborate these oral histories.
Do you have any of the clippings from the old newspapers or just like collections of them as well?
That's a great question and gets a little bit into the meat of archiving because we have such limited resources. We tend to try to preserve things that can't live anywhere else. And since those newspaper archives are available and preserved elsewhere, we have them saved in some ways, but not in an archival setting.
I have to ask, when people come to the museum, what is the reaction to this story? Because I imagine a lot of people coming are seeing it for the very first time.
Absolutely. I think the emotions range broadly, but most people are shocked that they had never heard this story before. I think that the exhibit that we've put together, which is called Freedwill, the story of the Randolph Freed people, which I should say is actually a traveling exhibit. It is not held permanently at the museum. It just recently came down at the Dayton Metro Library. We believe this is a better way to reach our audiences rather than expecting everyone to be able to travel to Wilberforce to see it. We want to bring it to communities all over the state. But the idea that this history is so incredibly rich and that most people living today hadn't heard it.
You know, something that comes to mind is a couple of weeks ago, we had a children's author named Carlotta Penn on the show, and she talked about her new book, Step by Step, which tracks the story of the Lincoln School, which I also think many people don't know. It is the longest sustained protest march of the civil rights movement. And it happened right here in Ohio. It was a group of mothers and children pushing for the integration of a school after Brown versus Board of Education. And so, you know, hearing that a few weeks ago and then hearing this story now, it kind of opens a larger question for me of how much history are we missing?
Oh, wow. Yes, completely agree. And I think I want to just honor the work that the people, you know, of the Lincoln School preserving that story have done, because it is so important to understand our state in a more complete way. You know, we grow up with the stories of the Underground Railroad and stories of Ohio as a free state, but our history is so much richer, so much more complex. And you know, even my work with, you know, the wonderful people preserving funk history, you know, I'm sad that that's not more well known in our state. So, yes, it really takes us all digging in, learning this history, sharing it, preserving it to get a better sense of who we are as Ohioans.
This may be a difficult question to answer, but why do you think so many of these stories aren't part of Ohio's history?
I wish there were a simple answer here. I think there are several things at play. And the easiest, kind of most surface answer here is the complexity of this story. You have nearly 400 main characters, you know, all of whom deserve to be honored. I hear you, you know, talking to people on the show saying, I'm confused about this, and this seems, you know, complex here. And that's accurate. The issue is when you start to peel back the layers of the story, you see just how complex it is. Thankfully, there are wonderful researchers trying to interpret this history. So Greg May just wrote a book called A Madman's Will that helps us understand better what happened with those three wills and his deathbed.
What's the name of that book again?
Yeah, A Madman's Will. This is a plug. Yes, please go online, purchase it, read it. It's a great read. But he is a Virginian and was able to help us understand what happened there. We also have a dissertation from a gentleman named Ross Bagby that was written for the Ohio State University in 1998. And he's done more research on this story than I think anyone, you know, and followed a lot of the freed people to their destinations across the state. And so this, you know, it trying to piece this together from all these different sources and having somewhat conflicting details at times can make people feel uncomfortable. But I think more abstractly, there is an issue here of identity, of who we call American, who gets to be an Ohioan. And we see almost as soon as Ohio becomes a state, 1804, these black codes that have been mentioned in the show are enacted that effectively designate African Americans as separate, as these acts were called an act to regulate African American persons in the state. And so immediately you have this practice of othering. And you can say that's a distant history, it's in our past. But then when you move forward and we're just sort of confronting the history of redlining, you see this practice kind of put on another mask. We have
these maps that were created by the Homeowners Loan Corporation that, you know, are very provocative, that designate specific areas, oftentimes that were communities of African Americans, as not deserving of resources, of places that people should not live. And while the maps, I think, are very provocative, graphic examples of this, it's the actual documentation that accompanied these maps that was created by the HOLC that is so poignant to me, because there's a line on this form that people had to fill out that requires people to describe what groups infiltrated these communities. So you have African Americans who are born and raised in these communities in Ohio, and they are described as infiltrating. And so I see that, you know, we are kind of coming to terms today with who gets to be in Ohio and whose stories are shared, whose stories are preserved. And I think we should all be kind of self-reflective about that question and maybe reclaim some of these stories we've chosen not to remember.
So I have to ask, how do we go down and see this exhibit? What hours are at the museum? If somebody listening is thinking, you know, this would be a great like trip for my kids this summer.
We would love anyone to visit. We are open from Wednesday through Saturday, 9 to 4. However, as I mentioned earlier, the exhibit is a traveling exhibit, so it is not on display at the museum currently, but we are in talks with several sites to take the museum exhibit out into the communities. And if you stay tuned to our Facebook, we will certainly post where the exhibit travels next. If you are at all interested in hosting the exhibit, please get in touch with us. But we do have a series of blogs on the Ohio History Connection website that tell just the basic details of this story, so that we hope it encourages anyone interested to dig deeper, to join us in the search for, you know, our Ohio history.
Yeah, I should have asked Representative Gerald if he was going to bring it to the State House, but perhaps that is a question I can ask him later. Yeah, especially if it comes to Central Ohio, we'll want to circle back.
That would be wonderful.
I mean, Wilberforce isn't that far.
That's right. Yeah, it's really not.
No. You know, are there other histories, though, at the museum that you can tell us about that maybe we don't know about either?
Absolutely. One Ohio-focused exhibit that we have on display right now is called Queens of the Heartland. It is an award-winning exhibit, and it details the history of African-American women who were either born in Ohio or came to the state for various opportunities. Starts, you know, as early as the reform movement and brings us up to the present day. We really like long timelines in the museum. But just showing how these women shaped not only the state of Ohio, not only the nation, but really expanded their efforts even beyond globally. And so these are, I think it's a really feel-good exhibit because you really cheer them all on. And I'm always excited to learn more about them.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I could never have a favorite. I will shout out Irene Long because she was a graduate of Wright State University, and she did recently pass away. So she's on my mind lately. We lost her, I believe, in 2020.
I know nothing about Irene Long, and we have just a couple minutes, so who was she?
Irene Long was a woman who, as a child, wondered why she never saw any women who looked like her who were medical professionals and involved in outer space. So she went to Wright State as one of the pioneers of this autospace engineering program, and so she became a medical professional for NASA, employee of NASA. And so I actually got to talk to NASA employees when I was putting her story together. And so if you want to learn more about her, you'll just have to come to the exhibit.
And if you want to learn more about the Randolph Freed people, you'll have to find the exhibit. It's currently at the Dayton Library.
Just came down, unfortunately. Ah. Yes.
So where's it going next?
We don't have anything confirmed yet, but we have had interest in the Auglaize, Mercer County area. So we do hope to bring it up north.
So we'll stay tuned. That was Hadley Drudge, curator of the National Afro-American Museum and Cultural Center in Wilberforce, Ohio. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to everyone who made this story possible. I want to particularly thank WOSU reporter Ali Vugrinzik for going out to southwestern Ohio to bring this story back, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, and our intern producer Abigail Jump, as well as board operations by Chris Johnston. And thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.